In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, November 1st, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number two of the program, a change in command at Joint Forces Command down in Norfolk, and you'll hear General Ray Odierno last week taking over that command, and you'll hear some of his remarks as well as comments from Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on the occasion of the change in command at GIFCOM. In hour number one of the program, we dig into the issue of cybersecurity and cyber warfare, and my guest to talk about that issue is Jeffrey Carr, principal at Gray Logic and author of the book Inside Cyber Warfare. And Jeff, it's great to talk to you, and nice to have you on the program. Thank you for joining me today.
Sure, Francis. It's my pleasure.
This book, as I said, is titled Inside Cyber Warfare. We talk about a lot in Washington about cybersecurity and not as much about cyber warfare. Tell me about the difference between those two concepts, please.
Well, sometimes there's a significant difference, and sometimes there's almost no difference. So it sort of goes to the heart of the complexity of the problem. And in fact, cyber warfare is really an awful term, and I've only used it because it's in common usage. But and I couldn't really name my book, cyber operations, cyber crime, cyber espionage. It would be just too long and too bulky a title.
Mm-hmm.
So I was stuck using a term that I really think is unfortunate. However, what happens in cyber warfare, that to distinguish it from cybersecurity, is that nation states will use non-state actors to enforce political objectives or to acquire assets, in a way that allows them plausible deniability. So, for example, with Russia and Georgia, when Russia actually had a military invasion and crossed Georgia's borders, at the same time, there were Russian and allied hackers causing problems for Georgian government websites. So Russia has said consistently that one had nothing to do with the other. But if you dig deep enough, it's fairly clear that, in fact, they were very closely aligned.
Was that the event that put as you say, for lack of a better term, cyber warfare on our radar screen in the United States, or was this something that we have been aware of and thinking about before that?
Certainly, individuals in government have been thinking about it, way before that. All the way back into the Marsh Report in 1997, there was concern about the security implications of the Internet. And in large part, you can go back there and look and see some of the same problems still exist today as existed 13 years ago. So it's not a new problem. It's also not new for Russia to use it in conjunction with some type of force, of physical or kinetic force that's occurred in the past as well. So it was probably just the one that made the biggest headlines and garnered the most attention.
You write in this book, the first chapter is called Assessing the Problem. Do you think we've done a good enough job of doing that the way it stands today?
Well, there's certainly a lot more information and exposure around the problem today. I would say we're probably not doing a good job in terms of quality of information, but of course there's a ton of there's a lot of quantity of information, and that is good. It's better than it used to be, but the quality can definitely stand to be improved.
Mm-hmm.
And the media, unfortunately, is just as responsible as certain former government employees that overstate the threat. Everyone has a little blame to share in terms of improving the quality, and I'd love to see that occur in the near future.
What is the threat as you see it today, Jeff?
Well, it depends on who you're speaking about. So if you're speaking about terrorists, I would say the cyber threat of terrorism is relatively low, not because they don't have the technical capabilities. What in our investigations, we see a lot of very highly skilled engineers that are part of an extremist religious organization and involved in hacking of one type or another. So the skill levels are there. I think the reason why we don't see too many cyber terrorist attacks is because the leadership of those cells are they're old guys, and their preference is a physical type of an attack, of destruction. And so even if an internet savvy extremist were to propose some type of cyber attack, I suspect that it would just get shelved.
Mm-hmm.
However, having said that, 5 years from now, maybe 7-8 years from now, I think we'll definitely see the cyber terror aspect of this increasing as more internet savvy extremists assume leadership positions and the old leadership dies off.
Does that mean we have a little bit of time to defend ourselves, to prepare ourselves for those kinds of attacks, and that we should focus more now on nation states?
It means that you have a little bit of time not to have to worry about irrational, terrorist-driven attacks. However, you don't have the time to sit back and allow the attacks that we're currently experiencing, which are under the radar. They're very subtle. And they have to do with stealing intellectual property. So I think it was Clausewitz that said war is just an extension of politics by other means. And if a nation state's ambitions are to achieve superiority in a variety of areas that the U.S. currently holds superiority in, and if by virtue of stealing intellectual property and increasing technology transfer by encouraging foreign R&D, investment, if they're successful at that and a shot has never been fired, then I think you can argue the case that, in fact, you've been in a cyber war. You just never knew it.
Yeah. Why is it that you think we haven't paid as much attention to the IP element of cybersecurity as we have?
Because there's a longstanding argument that espionage does not entitle a nation to go to war. And generally speaking, I think that's correct. I think that's true and correct because all states engage in espionage, and you'd be in constant battle if that were the case. On the other hand, you have to start taking espionage today more seriously because in the past it was constrained by virtue of what you had to do to acquire an asset. You know, you needed to groom someone to fit into an environment or to get placed into and move up in an environment. Like today, we consider those insider threats. But espionage today can be operated at such a higher level through the internet that it's become much more serious. And if you value as a nation state your position in the world in certain areas, that position is at risk, in my opinion, through some of these acts of theft of intellectual property.
This is proving to be, from what I'm told, much more of a challenge for private sector companies than the denial of service type cybersecurity issues is the idea of people trying to break into networks and steal intellectual property.
Yeah, denial of service was big a few years ago. It got a lot of attention because I think partly because we weren't really seeing examples of other types. But in a sense, it's so easy to solve. It's so easy to solve a denial of service attack today that it's almost more of a nuisance. What's really serious today is what's been termed an advanced persistent threat. Again, it's a sort of a buzzword which I hate to use, but it's how it's known. And that is you have an attacker who breaches a network and, regardless of your best efforts, manages to find ways to persist within that network by altering privileges or escalating privileges, I meant to say, and withdrawing or exfiltrating documents at a very slow, steady, patient rate so that they are under the radar and don't trip any alarms. That's much more serious than any noisy type of DDoS attack.
Jeff, the threats that we're seeing now, how do they fit with the evolution of the threats that we've seen in the past or the timeline that we've seen? Are these threats increasing exponentially, or is it kind of a gradual, linear change in how we're seeing these threats?
I think it's increasing exponentially. The problem is just like in the old days when you had to fight hand-to-hand combat. The firearm wasn't invented. So you had you know, the victor tended to be bigger, stronger, faster, more agile. But once the firearm was invented, that became more or less the great equalizer. And the internet has done that for very, very small developing countries today. Because great powers are network-centric, and our military is probably second to none anywhere in the world, and no one, I don't believe anyone rationally wants to come face-to-face with the U.S. military. On the other hand, it's very much dependent upon a vulnerable network, and any small nation-state or even group of skilled hackers can immobilize the world's greatest power. In terms of a military operation, so that's changed the playing field more than I think we have ever seen it change.
Jeffrey Carr is a principal at Gray Logic and author of the book Inside Cyber Warfare. We have a break, and when we come back, Jeff, I'd like to talk about whether we're looking at the right places and the right kinds of actors for cyber threats in the future. We'll do that when we return on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM in just a moment.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Can your heart be hacked? If you have a common pacemaker defibrillator device called an ICD, the answer might be yes. Today's ICDs are very convenient. Instead of opening your chest, adjustments can be made by sending wireless signals and monitored on the internet. But Kevin Fu, a University of Massachusetts professor, says the system could be hacked.
We showed that we could not only disable therapies, but we could also induce an electric shock that's designed to essentially stop the heart.
Adding security to medical devices is more challenging than on desktop computers. Fu says people ask him, why not just add a password?
And then I say, well, what happens if you forget the password?
The typical response,
well, I don't know. Can't they call their IT tech support?
Imagine that frustration during a life-threatening emergency. To find out more about this story, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorbeck Insider this afternoon. Conventional wisdom says the military produces strong leaders, but do leaders from different services have different skills? We'll talk to researchers who have studied that topic. And earlier this year, new federal hires automatically enrolled into the TSP. Are they deciding to stay enrolled? The first number's just out. We'll check them out this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorbeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jeffrey Carr, who is author of the book Inside Cyber Warfare and also a principal at Grey Logic. And Jeff, I mentioned before the break that we look at the nation states of Russia and China as potential cyber threats. And you write a lot about the rise of the non-state hacker in your book. But you also mention Africa as a source of attacks and even the possibility that it's where we might find a huge botnet threat. Why do you think Africa doesn't get much attention when it comes to cyber threats?
Well, Africa hasn't really been come online until just recently. This summer, I think they might have brought another underground cable or two online, but it's been mostly dial-up services in Africa. They're not really part of the Internet as we know it or experience it. However, they certainly are coming online now, and you do have a problem of maybe 80 million infected PCs throughout the continent. That means that they're certainly eligible to be scooped up and harvested by botmasters to create botnets of an enormous size. So while botnets and DDoS attacks can be quickly remediated, once you get past a certain number, it's a whole other problem. When you get up to 20 million, 30 million, 50 million, and they can certainly create a nationwide impact, literally shut down the Internet for an entire mid-sized country, if not shut down the entire global network. So theoretically, Africa has a huge potential for mayhem. But there are other issues in Africa as well. For one thing, China has been building out the information and communications infrastructure of that continent and pretty much owns it right now.
Mm-hmm.
That'll give them a lot of resources, additional resources, that they can utilize for their own ends, for their own purposes. Part of that might be energy. Africa is has huge reserves of certain key minerals and mining deposits. Anyone who has or controls the infrastructure in that continent has the ability to intercept or even influence that information exchange for key, elements. So I think there are many layers of concern for the continent of Africa that simply don't make the light of day.
Short of us going in there and building out that infrastructure ourselves, what is our role in trying to stop that potential from being exercised at some point?
Actually, it's too late for that. I mean, it's already done. China already owns it. So it's not something that we can just decide, well, okay, let's jump in and see what we can do. So there's not an awful lot that can be done at this point to mitigate that. And possibly, to try to invest more and play a bigger role in solving some of Africa's major problems, to create allies and assets in countries that we have a strategic interest in and even countries that we don't, just in order to create goodwill. I mean, the Internet is also being used, like in Zimbabwe, to put down political enemies of the ruling governments and to sustain corrupt, governments in power. So there's a lot there that we could become involved with if we had the will and the money, to do it.
Jeffrey Carr is my guest. He's author of the book Inside Cyber Warfare on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Jeff, there's so much in this book I'd like to cover, but when we come back to wrap up, I want to skip right to chapter 12 of your book, which is titled A Cyber Early Warning Model. Talk about that a little bit when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 47 points. The Nasdaq higher by 2. Our nation's factories were a little bit busier in September. Manufacturing activity expanded at the fastest pace since May. That was as demand for cars, computers, and other goods rose both in the U.S. and abroad. Consumer spending rose 0.2%, while personal income fell 0.1% in September. Medical supplies distributor McKesson is buying U.S. Oncology for $560 million in cash. The deal will help strengthen McKesson's position in its distribution of cancer drugs. And Saw 3D slashed its way to the top of the box office this Halloween weekend. The final episode in the series only managed to make $22.5 million despite the allure of the 3D technology. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
With Ally Bank's 24/7 live customer care, you can speak with a real person, not a machine, anytime you want. So if you need to know the latest and greatest interest rate at 1 p.m. or check your account balance at 4 a.m., it's no problem. Just press 0, and you'll be connected to a knowledgeable customer care associate who will help answer your questions. Plus, we post our wait times right on our website, so not a moment of your time is wasted. Now, when it comes to banking, who wouldn't love that? To learn more, visit allybank.com or call us anytime at 877-247-2559. Member FDIC.
There's no guarantee your teenager won't dye her hair purple. No guarantee it won't rain on your next vacation. In a world that gives you so many reasons to lose sleep at night, consider an investment that won't. With municipal bonds insured by Assured Guarantee, every dime of your principal and interest is guaranteed. Assured Guarantee is the global leader in bond insurance, with the financial strength and risk management skills to stand behind every bond we insure. Talk to your financial advisor or visit ThinkAssured.
Diaper bag, check. Bouncy seat, check. Stroller, car seat, bottles, butt wipes, and binky, check, check, and double check. Why it takes 30 pounds of equipment to transport one 12-pound baby, we'll never know. So at Kaiser Permanente, we put everything for baby and you in one place. Everything you need, from obstetricians and nurses to nutritionists and pediatricians. A whole care team of specialists assembled to keep your baby and you in top running order, not running around. And you can even go online with My Health Manager to schedule routine appointments, check most lab results, and exchange emails with your Kaiser Permanente doctor's office. Imagine having a conversation with your pediatrician without having to fold or unfold that stroller. Convenient? Check. Efficient? Check. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Researchers at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, say vegetation likely plays a bigger role in cleaning the atmosphere than was even previously thought. They use genetic studies and computer modeling to show that deciduous plants absorb about a third more of a common class of air-polluting chemicals than studies in the past showed. The new study was supported in part by the National Science Foundation. Plants can produce a particular class of oxygenated chemicals to protect themselves from irritants and repel invaders such as insects, similar to the human body's increase of white blood cells due to an infection. It turns out the chemicals have long-term impacts on the environment and human health. The research shows plants can actually adjust their metabolism, absorbing more of the chemicals as a response to various types of stress.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Kids and nicotine tabs. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. New dissolvable nicotine tablets and sticks are being sold like cigarettes, although they're marketed as a substitute for smoking in times and places where a smoker can't light up. But researchers say these products, which may be the size of a breath mint, can pose big problems for small children who could eat them like candy. They're flavored with cinnamon or mint. The researchers computed how many pellets it would take to sicken a child. At the Harvard School of Public Health, Greg Connolly gives the result for a one-year-old.
Based on a review of the scientific evidence, if a child ingests 10 pellets, in all likelihood they're going to have serious neurological problems.
The study in the journal Pediatrics was supported by the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Companies win federal contracts every day. Your business should be one of them. Get the latest on the top federal contracting opportunities for 2011 at Input's FedFocus event. FedFocus is the government contracting community's premier event that showcases the outlook for defense and civilian markets, data center consolidation trends, and more. Join Input on November 4th at the Fairview Park Marriott in Falls Church, Virginia, and lead your business to success. Register at fedfocus2011.input.com or call Input Events at 703-707-3698.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Inside Cyber Warfare is the latest book from Jeffrey Carr, principal at Gray Logic, and my guest on the program today. And chapter 12 of this book, Jeff, is, I guess it's hard to say my favorite in a book about cyber warfare, but this cyber early warning model I thought was fascinating. And I'd like you to talk for just a minute about what we should be looking for, not just as an attack happens that may be cyber warfare itself, but what we should be paying attention to on an ongoing basis and how we should be preparing ourselves ahead of time.
Thanks. That is an important question. So what I recommend, and we have the bottom line is that you cannot protect everything from everyone. There is no 100% protection in cyberspace. So you have to decide to protect your most critical assets and focus on that. The best way, what I recommend to our clients is to identify what you have that's valuable and then to identify to whom is that valuable. And that'll give you an idea of what you can expect. If you are an energy producer, then it's important to understand which nation states around the world are competing for your resources. If they have cyber capabilities that they're building out, then it's a pretty good bet they're already inside your network. And that's the best way to look forward, in my view, to see what might be coming at you, you know, down the road. If you're a systems integrator for the Department of Defense and you're working on an advanced aircraft design, you need to know what countries out there have A, cyber capabilities, and B, are interested in advanced aircraft design, and do your research. This is, in my view, one of the best ways to anticipate, you know, what's coming up against you down the road.
Are we doing a decent enough job of that, do you think, in doing that kind of that assessment, that almost triage in determining what needs to be shored up first?
No, I don't think we are. For one thing, it's costly and time consuming. Anti-terrorism groups have had a lot of luck just mining forums, jihadist forums, for open source intelligence, and it works for them. Hackers, not so much. They've left those forums. They've left public forums a year and a half ago, and it's a much more complex process now to determine, how to obtain intel, open source intelligence on who might be after what you have. And most companies are not going to spend the money on that. And that's one of the reasons why Gray Logic has launched a different company to address that problem for corporate customers, because nobody wants to really, that's the bottom line. Nobody wants to spend the money and possibly lose profit and maybe even risk a shareholder lawsuit on something as amorphous as trying to guess what's coming at you down the road. But that's what security is. Security is risk management. It means looking forward and anticipating and, you know, building a defense against that.
I'm going to ask you the same question to wrap up that I ask to just about every guest that I have on talking about cyber issues, and that is, a lot of the things that we hear, a lot of the things that we read, in fact, a few things in this book, are pretty scary and pretty daunting. Is there good news? Are there things that we're doing well or things that we're doing right?
Sure. I think there's always good news. I love the fact that the Department of Defense is now investing money in microgrids. One of the worst vulnerabilities of the power grid in the U.S. was that critical Department of Defense assets were relying on the public grid, and the public grid is extremely vulnerable. So I was very happy to see just a month or two ago that bases are now building green or solar-powered microgrids that will be built to endure any blackout and sustain itself indefinitely. And I think that's a huge step forward. I also want to make sure that I give credit to our law enforcement, to the FBI and the Secret Service, who I think are doing a great job of closing down on building international relationships with law enforcement and shutting down very bad cybercrime operations. Both of those, I think, are very positive steps forward.
Jeffrey Carr, principal at Gray Logic and author of the book Inside Cyber Warfare, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll put up some information about the book and a link so people can buy it if they want to buy it. And, Jeff, next time you're in Washington, I'd love to have you come into the studio and sit down with you face-to-face and talk some more about some of these challenges that we're trying to deal with.
My pleasure. Anytime.